Welcome back to the Lead Up Podcast. I am your host, Renato Guerra. And this is where we get to learn and connect from diverse leaders from various industries to learn more about their leadership journey. And so others can level up in their leadership. And before I get to my guest, as always, want to give a special shout out to Darling New Media. Shout out to Nate behind the camera making all this happen for the production. So shout out to Darling New Media. And want to give a special thanks to all the listeners. If you're listening in your car, watching in, on your laptop, at the gym, really just appreciate you guys tuning in. Love the feedback that I've been getting and all the content that you guys are taking in, and it seems like it's sticking. So glad to hear that. For those that are listening for the first time or watching, welcome to the Lead Up Podcast. Glad that you're making some time to check us out. And I hope this content is valuable. So without further ado, I want to introduce my next guest. This individual I've known for the last, man, like a little over 5 years since I got to work with IYT. And he was a student, and I just met him along the way as he was a mentor to a lot of other students. Got to know him more through college and, you know, seeing him graduate and then now taking on, seeing him on his professional journey. So I want to welcome to the show, Johan Cardenas. What's going on, sir? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Feeling very privileged and lucky to be here today and just given the opportunity to share my story.
For sure. No, and that's one of the main reasons why I asked you and because you've often shared your story with students and you've shared it, you know, at different events that we've put on and different things in the community. But I'm curious, man, just to, again, to share with people that are listening or watching, tell us a little bit about your background, your story, where you grew up, just so people can understand who you are.
Yeah, I'll be happy to. I love saying my name, but again, you know, my name is Johan Cardenas. I was born in Sacramento, California, but I was very lucky and very privileged to be raised in Mexico. So I was raised in the home state of where my family is from, which is Sinaloa. And then a few years later, moved to Tijuana, where kind of the best years of my life happened. Grew up with a single mother in Tijuana, who always made sure, you know, that me and my sister were you know, well taken care of. She was always working, but she was always there in spirit. You know, make sure you go to school, make sure you stay away from from negative things and people. And that's how it was, you know, for me growing up in Tijuana. A few years later, when I turned 15 years old, I say probably a month before we moved to the U.S., we specifically moved to Sacramento, South Sacramento to be more specific. And at the time, I did not speak any English. I was enrolled at Valley High School as a freshman. I was going to start my freshman year. Did not speak any English. It was very challenging, but I say the most challenging part for me was the social part. Coming from Mexico, the way of living and the culture and everything was just a hit for me. However, I think it was also very challenging for me because I came freshman year of high school, and I had this idea that I wanted to go to college. And I remember asking so English learners have their own counselor, and I had my own counselor, and I remember asking her, how can I make it, how can I get to college? Is there an application? Is there something that I have to do? Mm-hmm. And she just completely shut me down, you know, because she said, you don't have the English skill to go to college. Mm. And that was very negative on myself, you know. It really put me down. It put all my, you know, I had a lot of emotions at the time. It was freshman year. But something happened my second year of high school, sophomore year. I was in my, this is funny, I was in honors biology, being an English learner. And it was funny because I didn't know, I wouldn't speak English, but I would, you know, go to class and like my general science class, right? I would go and do the work. I don't know what it was, right? Maybe because I was a very introvert person and I wouldn't really try to speak what I learned.
Yeah.
But something happened that second year around April. I was sitting in class and I get called to the career center. And there is a meeting going on with Michael Lynch and Michael Casper. And I get recruited into this program called Improve Your Tomorrow. And from on there, it's just like a lot of learning for me, you know, growing out of my shell. And it was just, that's the beginning of my, I say, my professional career and journey. And the first time for me to step on a college campus, they took me on, they took us, it was 16 young black and brown boys. And they took us to a Stanford field trip.
Yeah.
And the best part about it is that Michael and Casper did it during the week. It was on a Wednesday. So we were on the college campus on a Wednesday and it was full of people, full of students. It was just, for me, it was just my first time being on there. And I remember going on the way back on the bus and going back home and thinking like, wow, like, so this is what college is like. I really want to go to college. I don't care what I have to do. I have to work 2 or 3 times more than other people. You know, my English, my professional skills, whatever I have to do, I'm going to do it. And that was the start of me, you know, working towards going to college. And that was, you know, about college. But a year later in summer of my junior year, I applied for a Capital internship that I was pushed on to apply by my mentor, Michael, Michael Lynch. And this internship was at the state capitol. And that was also another first-timer for me. You know, being more than anything, being accepted into the internship was something big for me. Coming from where I came from, speaking all English and all that, going into the capital and being an intern, I interned with Assemblymember Jose Medina, and he was just the best mentor that I had, you know, at the capital. As you know, him being a member, him being, you know, someone who's already like at a, such a professional level, it was for me like, oh wow, like this is what I want to do. I already know I want to go to college, and this is a career that I want to take. I want to do political science and come back to the capital and work for a staff member, you know, and work my way up to, you know, create better laws and bills that will help, you know, improve communities of color, communities like I grew up in, you know, South Sacramento. And that's kind of where my college and professional journey started. Years later, I graduated high school at Valley High School. I graduated 2015. Class of 2015 at Valley High School, went straight to Sac State. However, at Sac State, my first year, especially my first semester, was very challenging. I struggled. I gained a 2.3 GPA my first semester, which for me was a hit. I was depressed when I saw my GPA, you know, and when I saw my GPA, I wasn't just depressed for myself, but for all the people that had helped me get there, you know, my family, my mentors. I was just thinking to myself, like, am I going to be able to do this? You know, do I have to drop out of college? What do I do? Like, that was my whole thinking at that time. However, you know, the next day I just woke up and it was just, I had a different perspective. I said, you know, okay, like I got to come up with a plan. I have to pick my classes for next year, for next semester, right? And I came up with the plan. chose some easy classes and some of the classes that I had to take from my, you know, they usually have to take to complete your GE courses. And I successfully, you know, gained my GPA up, and I kind of gained that experience, you know, how to college works, you know, how to make my way through, you know, when to pick classes, you know, how to do it, you know, things like that. So gained my way up. Later on, graduated college, became the first one in my family to graduate from college, you know, with a degree in political science. And however, through all my college career, I did an internship every summer at the state capitol. So I was in college, gaining experience and all those things. And by gaining experience, I didn't just gain experience at the legislative level, but I also went outside that circle. I went into nonprofits. I was working in a nonprofit called Chirla. They work, you know, helping immigrants, you know, uplifting immigrant rights, you know, protecting them. And then my last internship was with the Latino Coalition for a Healthier California. And yeah, it was just college, making sure that I, you know, was working my way up through my career. But also, this was very, I think I was forgetting about the most important part, which was being a mentor. So I started as a student at Improve Your Tomorrow, like you said at first, and then move up to become a mentor for Black and Brown Boys of Men of Color at a high school, which was Valley High School. I went back to Valley and became a mentor. And it was just the best thing for me, the best thing that could have happened to me. I have Michael Casper and Michael Lynch as my mentors. And now I knew what it was to be in their position, you know, to sit down with the student and talk to them, you know, to know about their experience, to see how can I help them and how can my own experience motivate them. Just like Michael and Casper, you know, share their experience with me. And it made me feel like, oh, well, like they went through all that, so I can actually, you know, be successful as well. So, yeah, after I became, you know, graduated college, did all my internships, you know, and I transitioned from being a mentor to a new position in 2019. I think it was, 2020, October 2020. I think it was my last, my last time when I was a mentor. And I transitioned into a position that's way different than working at the Capitol or being a mentor. I actually started a position as a program specialist for a nonprofit called Public Health Advocates. But I got to work with a program called My Brother's Keeper. So through this program, they have four pillars, MBK Sacramento, they call it, My Brother's Keeper Sacramento. And they have four different pillars. They have education, which is part of, you know, Improve Your Tomorrow. But I came directly into the healthy development pillar, which is way different than all the things that I was working on before. You know, yes, I was working with young people, with young boys and men of color, but that I was working more into the education part. And never on the healthy, you know, development part. And a lot of people think that because it is, you know, healthy development, they think it's just, a lot of times they get confused. And, but the healthy development pillar is more about, you know, talking about how do we support and, you know, and approach, you know, in better ways, young boys and men of color when it comes to their mental health. So that's part of my work. I help create, you know, we have this series called Trauma Healing and Learning Series, where we bring in, you know, professionals who are already probably doctors. And we create a, we come up with the theme, or maybe there is an issue going on currently. A great example was, you know, young boys and men of color going back to school in person.
Yeah, that was big.
The trauma that they might have gone through at home all that time. Maybe, you know, and as they come back in person, you know, how do we help them? And we come up with this series, you know, where we bring in as panelists, you know, like maybe a school counselor, mm-hmm. a social worker, you know, and have them share, you know, what do you think are the best ways to help support these young boys and men of color as they come back into campus? Right. So
I want to ask something to that, because there's something important from what you shared. You know, for the time that I knew you, you were all about the education and the mentorship. And to switch to something, although maybe you're still serving maybe the same people or the same population, the approach and what you're talking about or the focus changes a little bit. I'm curious to hear more about, like, you know, how was that transition from like something that you were doing for so long, for many years, to something maybe a little bit different? Maybe you're not your specialty, but yeah, what was maybe either challenging, or what did you learn about yourself stepping into that new role, into a new arena, a new pillar, as you're talking about?
Yeah, you know, I came from working directly with the young boys and men of color. You know, and by directly, I mean, you know, sitting with them, you know, physically on a, you know, on the table and talking to them, speaking to them about their, you know, their grades, their life, and things like that. And that was part of the my job as a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the healthy development pillar, it is something more outside of that. It's more external, you know. It's about informing, you know, health practitioners and providers or professionals who work with the young boys and men of color, you know, on better ways and practices, you know, on how to approach them. Mm-hmm. And this is more about, like, it could be like a doctor, it could be like a counselor, a therapist, you know, and this type of people, you know, it's more like, it's not just talking to the student. The only part I get to talk to a student, maybe it's through some youth listening sessions,
mm-hmm.
Where I ask the students, you know, or the young boys and men of color about their challenges with the health system.
Yeah.
You know, do they have any questions about this? Do they have any, or maybe, you know, like I say, you know, maybe an issue going on, right? Like, what are their, do they have any questions about this issue? Or,
yeah.
And I think that's the difference, you know. And it's a little both sad for me and motivating, because yeah. I don't get to work with my students anymore directly, yeah. right? But I get to work on the position, and I'm at a position where I get to help create change and improve, you know, like the yeah. way they are treated and you know, and help. Yeah. So
yeah,
I think that's the difference.
That's a great point that you make about making a change, because as leaders, that's kind of the hope and goal, that you are making change. Over time, it starts to look a little bit different, right? From, as you were saying, like directly, you know, one-on-ones, you're meeting with them on a consistent basis, but that kind of shifts gradually sometimes in the roles where you're more behind the scenes, you're creating more systems or processes, or you're involving other people into decision making, right? To make the impact, right? Although you're not like directly talking to somebody. So maybe if you could share too, just as you're talking about the transition, what have been some of the biggest changes or in terms of your development of your leadership? What are some things that you've noticed that you needed to maybe build and kind of develop in your new role, or as you stepped in these last couple of years from IYT to public health advocates? What's kind of different about your leadership style?
I was reading this question when you sent it to me, and I was just thinking about myself when I first moved here. And I didn't speak in English, but there was another part of me that was, you know, very hard to understand. And I was a very introvert person. I'm still an introvert, but at that time, you know, I was very... It was very hard for me to share things, to stand up to, you know, and talk and do things like that. It was just very hard for me. It was impossible for me. Mm. If you were to go and talk to Michael Lynch right now and ask him about yeah. how was Johan when he first came, you know, or when you first met him, and he probably is like, he never talked.
Right.
Michael will ask me things and I will understand and I was nod my head on or say like yes, no, yes. And I think back to that time and I'm like, now I'm like a whole different person.
Yeah.
I'm still an introvert, but it's just different.
Yeah.
I'm in a position where when I first came into this position, I realized that I have a power, which is my voice. And telling my story. I'm in a position where I get to give advice to other people about how to work with young people, how to support them, and things like that. And I need to be a leader. And by being a leader, I mean just making sure that I get my points across, you know, and also, you know, stand up for others, you know. Being a leader is also, you know, uplifting other people's, you know, stories, challenges, and, you know, help make a change. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, a leader is someone like that who's, it's not just someone who's just talking out there in the front, you know?
Yeah.
But it's someone who's also, you know, helping others, you know, uplifting voices. I was once that person behind, and now I feel like that I am in the front. And it's my job to help uplift that young person's voice in the back.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I was just in a meeting with the mayor. I think it was last Saturday, and there were some young people on there. They're probably like in middle school, and I was just thinking, wow, like they're doing this right now. So, what can I do to help them? You know, they're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
They're feeling, you know. Like maybe their voice is not going to be heard when they ask their question. What can I do to help uplift their voices, to motivate them? You know, maybe talk to them about their question and how do they feel? And yeah, that's something about me that really changed my you know, leadership. And something very helpful as well that I don't want to miss or leave behind is the people who I work with right now.
Yeah.
I get to work with people who are very positive minded. They are very motivating. My supervisors and mentors are always, you know, motivating me, you know, supporting me, you know, do you need help with anything? Do you need, you know, and that also makes me feel, you know, motivating to be a better leader as well. So,
And that makes a big difference. I think environments and not just a physical environment, because typically environments include people. And so it's important to have people that will uplift you, encourage you, challenge you to be better, right? Or give you knowledge and information. That goes a long way. So it really sounds like it's made a tremendous impact. And kind of as a follow-up in terms of like the changes in your leadership and in your role, how do you continue to develop and grow? You know, I can hear people saying, you know, I'm a student or I'm working a job. I don't have the time to maybe, you know, intentionally, you know, maybe take a class or read a book, but they still want to grow. Like, what are some things that you practically do to still develop and grow and build upon your leadership?
Oh man. I think for me is bringing back the idea of the people who I get to work with.
Yeah.
Going into meetings every day with this positive minded people, who make me feel, again, you know, motivated. They make me feel safe. Sorry, they make me feel like I'm in a room where I feel safe and brave.
Yeah,
to speak. And I think that's my advice. You know, when it comes to like growing and develop as a leader, it's like a group of friends, right? If you're with a group of friends where you don't feel comfortable, you're not gonna be able to share things out loud. You're not gonna be able to express yourself. But if you're in a group of friends, you know, where you feel comfortable sharing things, you feel, you know, safe,
yeah,
that's also going to help you be a, you know, develop as a better leader.
Yeah, right.
But when it comes to getting out of that group, it will help you. You know, for me, like I said, I was a very introvert kid. Mm-hmm. And the most challenging part for me was to stand up in front of people and speak.
Yeah.
Or when someone asks for a volunteer to speak, you know, I will never put my hand up or anything like that. But nowadays, it's just like, if no one is willing to, I will do it. It's not one, if someone is scared about it, you know, I will go up and share, you know, whatever I have to share, just to uplift other people.
Yeah.
And when it comes to like also growing and developing, it's also, you know, trainings. You know, I do some trainings through you know, meetings. What does that look like? It could be, you know, creating an agenda, creating a script,
right,
things like that can really help you be a better leader. You know, yeah, those are all the things that I can think about. And and also time. Time is very valuable. You know, making sure that you continue to practice. I do practice myself sometimes when I'm with myself.
Yeah.
You know, in the mirror, if I'm in the car driving, I talk to myself, right? Like, okay, like I have this presentation later on, like
listening to Lemon Trees.
Yes. yeah, you know, look up to some some points, talking points that I have to do.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. I did want to bring it back to, you said something very powerful about creating a space that's safe, right? Or making sure that people are safe. And I want to take it back to your mentoring days, because I think maybe in some ways you're not thinking explicitly like, I'm going to make this safe, but you naturally do it. And I think that's what kind of made you a really impactful mentor. And I mentioned this safety thing because in Crucial Conversations is a book, right? And it's a whole curriculum. For those that are not familiar with it, I highly encourage people read the book, Crucial Conversations. But there's a key piece in there where it talks about when people need to have crucial conversations, usually in the workplace, why some people might shut down is because they do feel unsafe, right? They feel uncomfortable to not be open, right? So it really advises and encourages of like how to create a safe space so people can have those conversations and communication lines. So I know you're not the expert or like a guru or something like other people would say, but just kind of thinking about that concept of making an environment safe, right? Whether it's at your workplace or at home, what are some things that people can do, from your opinion, to make an environment safe? Like how would you show up in a way that's like, I want to be able to communicate something, but I want to make sure that this person feels safe enough to share something, you know, whether it's something important, something vulnerable, or something that, you know, is sensitive. Hopefully that makes sense, what I'm asking.
Yes. And I was just thinking in my head right now of something that I heard before in a meeting. And when it comes to making, you know, a safe space and I'm going to be honest, when it comes to like, especially like young boys and men of color, you know, it is so hard for them to open up and feel comfortable when they come into a room. But also when it comes to like the professional setting right now, where I get to do every day and the people I work with, is always make sure that you are open-minded, that you are there to also understand other people's experience, and also understand that maybe they have not gone through the same experience as you, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they went through something different. But something also very powerful to create a space like that is telling your story.
Yeah.
If this is the first time that you're coming into this meeting, and all these people are getting together, you know, tell your story. Like, tell your story. Say why you're there. For example, like, why am I doing this type of work? It's a good way to come into a space like this and, you know, and open the floor and feel people and make people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But when it came to me being a mentor, it was me thinking back to when I was a student, where Michael and Casper were open-minded. They made me feel comfortable, safe. they were not going to judge me. If I ever had a question, they had an answer. If they didn't have an answer, they would get back to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's, those two things are very important, you know, be open-minded, you know, telling your story. And also, I think this is always very important, but setting up some rules into the space, you know, not being respectful, sorry, not being disrespectful, you know, things like that can also be, you know, very helpful.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's, I mean, that's definitely spot on. Because again, the more and more, especially in, you know, as the world is changing really again, in terms of the workforce, you know, as people are in person, virtual, right, hybrid, kind of a mix, I think it's even more important to have those spaces because people are, you know, frustrated. They have a life outside of work, right? So it's important to empathize, which I think that's what you're saying. Empathy is something that I would think before it was seen as very weak or, but it's something that is very strong and powerful that is very much needed today in today's world. As we kind of start landing the plane, I'm curious to hear, man, as you're continuing on your journey, you know, to develop yourself as a professional and in your career, where do you see yourself in the next few years? What is something that you're pursuing? What's the kind of the next project or kind of passion or dream that's on the horizon for you?
You know, in long term, I probably see, you know, I'm looking into master's degrees, you know, master's programs right now. You know, I want to make sure I have a plan for that, that I have, you know, the time and the, you know, that I make sure that I choose the right, you know, the right career, right? I don't just want to take master's just because. I want to take a master's that will actually help me elevate my career as a leader. I want to be a better speaker. I want to be a better, you know, spokesperson. I want to be a better, I just want to be better at that.
Yeah.
You know, because my goal is to be a leader in Sacramento that, you know, motivates young people that every time they see me, you know, that's my whole goal right now, like when it comes to that. But when it comes to like a short term, you know, I do, you know, continue doing the work that I do, which is, you know, help uplifting, you know, young voices, you know, working with the city, you know, creating better policies. I do, I am currently working with the coalition called SAC Kids First. We're working on getting a youth fund created here in Sacramento. Not just a fund that's going to be, you know, oh yeah, you know, here's some money, here's some leftover money and this and that, right? We want to make sure that there's a stable youth fund for the young people in Sacramento. You know, that every year there is, you know, that money there so that people can apply, you know, to, for the programs, you know, they want to do, whatever they want to do, right? Like that money should be available for that. And I'm also, you know, doing this work with the, public health advocates. So some of the work that I do, we are just about to complete a, so we're working on a series called Trauma Healing and Learning series that I shared before at the beginning. We were, at the beginning, we were working here in Sacramento. The series were just aimed as, towards young boys and men of color. But now my supervisor and mentor, you know, decided, you know, we should go and do it statewide. You know, we have a, here in Sacramento, we have a lot of, probably is about 300 people attend every, you know, series.
Wow.
And we said, wow, like, why don't we do statewide?
Yeah.
Right. But also going statewide can mean we can talk about other issues and help uplift other people's voices.
Yeah.
Which means, you know, we cannot just talk about young boys and men of color and their challenges, but we should also be uplifting the voices of young women of color, right?
Right.
The LGBT plus community, you know, all these laws being created against them, you know, things like that, right? Making sure that their voices are being heard, that people learn firsthand from them on how to better support them and you know, and approach them, you know, when it comes to their challenges and all those things. So
yeah,
that's one thing that I'm looking forward to. Also creating new partners in other cities, you know. I don't know if we plan to do it on Zoom for now, but maybe you know, in a year, maybe it is, you know, in person in other city, and have to travel, you know, and meet other people in person.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that. And we're also working on a toolkit. So we're working on a provider toolkit. We're almost done with it. The provider toolkit will be to inform your health providers and practitioners. You know, it's going to be kind of part of the trauma healing and learning series.
Mm-hmm.
From what we got from a youth listening session, where we talked to some young boys and men of color here in Sacramento, yeah, about their questions they had about the health system, you know, mm-hmm, when they go to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
We all know that, especially Black and brown people, especially men, mm-hmm, don't go as often to the doctor. And yeah, if they happen to go once, they don't really go back. So what is going on there is a question, right? And I had this youth listening sessions with some young boys here in Sacramento. And I just asked them, you know, like, when you go to the doctor, do you feel comfortable? Do you have any questions for the doctor that maybe they don't ask you when you go?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that you really want to learn more about the health system?
Yeah.
You know, it could be not just going when you visit the doctor, but also about the, you know, getting health insurance.
Right.
And some young people say, you know, why is insulin so expensive for my mom? You know, why is this and that so expensive, right? Why is it so hard to get health insurance?
Right.
You know, and those I also remember, yeah, and I was surprised from them, right? And but there was this young boys that said, I want that when I go to the doctor, they match my vibe. And at first I was just laughing because of the way he said it, right?
Yeah.
He said, I want him to match my vibe. But then I was thinking about it and I was just like, okay, match my vibe. He means, you know, he wants the doctor to not talk to him about like things he doesn't know.
Yeah.
Right. The young person that doesn't want the doctor to go ahead of, you know, talk about things that the young person doesn't know. He wants the doctor to, you know, meet him at where he knows.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this are some things that we're doing. We're also, apart from the provider toolkit, we're also doing the youth toolkit. The youth toolkit is more about for young people to know their rights when they go mm-hmm. to the doctor.
Yeah.
Right. I have the right for this. I have the right for that. But those are some of the things that I am working on. Yeah, like long term and short term.
That's awesome, man. Sounds like you've got your hands full. So, and it sounds like you're doing great stuff, man. So I really appreciate the work that you're doing, not only in Sacramento, but it sounds like, you know, maybe even beyond. So that's really great. So we're going to move to the last segment, my favorite segment called Lightning Round. So these are questions that I did not share with you. These are just random questions that you're just going to answer at the top of your head. These are just fun questions. So we're going to, I think it's about 10 or so questions, and then we'll wrap it up. So got to ask you, are you ready for the lightning round?
Yes.
All right, let's get it. So this question will kick us off. Who do you think will win the World Cup this summer?
Ah. Mexico. I got to go with Mexico.
Oh, okay. Okay. I had a feeling.
I got to believe it.
Artist or song that is currently on repeat?
Ah. Middle Child by J. Cole.
Middle Child by J. Cole. Most recent show that you binge watched?
Killing It.
What is
it? It's on Killing It on Peacock.
TV? Oh, Peacock. You got the Peacock. Okay. Free subscription. Or... All right. Next one. Something that most people wouldn't know about you.
That I'm serious.
That you're serious. Okay.
I smile a lot. So a lot of people don't think that I can get serious.
Who would win in a roast battle? Sam Lauderdale or Johan Cardenas?
Of course, me.
Hey, there we go. I love it. You hear that, Sam? Coming.
Sam will just like step away and say like, okay, I lose.
All right. Who would win in an arm wrestling match? Michael Lynch or Michael Casper?
I don't think this is a question that needs a lot of thinking, but you know, I just go with Michael Lynch.
Okay.
My bad, Casper. I have to be realistic.
I just asked the questions, Mike. So you can blame it on Johan. All right, here we go. Next one. What would your superpower be?
Teleportation.
That's a popular one. All right. Next one. Your most used emoji icon.
The laughing one.
Okay. The straight face or the tilted one?
No, the tilted one. That's just okay. Straight laughing. For gotcha. Everything. You know, like, even some things that might be like, I don't know.
Yeah. What's the worst nickname given to you?
Fideo.
Fideo. Oh, wow. Noodle?
Yes, for soccer.
Nice.
There is a soccer player called, they call him Fideo.
Okay. Fideo. Place you most want to travel to?
Switzerland.
Nice. Biggest lesson you learned so far in 2022?
Love yourself.
Love that. All right, last one here. Finish the statement. Every leader needs what?
A mentor.
I love it. Every leader needs a mentor. You heard it here from Johan Cardenas. Johan, thank you so much for making some time to be on the show. I love hearing more about your story and all the things that you shared. So thank you so much. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Lead Up Podcast. Peace.